Thank you for joining us today. Really, really excited to have you for this interesting discussion we're going to be having, you know, talking about ancient philosophy in the modern day times. Actually, it was based on you did a live yesterday. You were talking with one of the people who are familiar to our movement, and you were saying that you've been diving deep into this book known as the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, to the point where you're going to be giving us a course or a discourse on, you know, the contents of the Gita, your understanding of it. And here on this page, we've had a few people who've actually come and given us a lot of like doubtful questions about the Gita. What's its significance and its relevance? And I thought, because I didn't give you any brief on everything today, I just thought I'll just try to play the devil's advocate today, ask sure. you some questions, you know. So guys, he has no clue what's going on. I'm just going to hit him with a few questions that probably people do think about, even though we have taken shelter of this knowledge, just to kind of get some validity of why we actually focus on the teachings of the Gita. So as a disclaimer, this is not my my opinion. Most of these things are not, you know, what I believe in, but, you know, yeah. I know you'll be able to debunk it. Yeah, so let's get started.
The monk.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, someone here is actually saying Sound, Place and Time is talking about your live yesterday and was saying how amazing that was. Awesome. So, Jai. All right, so this book, the Bhagavad Gita, spoken 5,000 years ago. We're looking at our world today, and we're looking at the world as it was in the context of this book. How is that knowledge going to be relevant for us in this present time?
Yeah, because it seems like historically, culturally, politically, socially, so far removed from what we look around and witness in the world today, right?
Yeah.
The Bhagavad Gita was spoken at a time when there was great conflict amongst the people of the world. We witness quite a lot of conflict in the world around us at the moment. You might have noticed that.
Yeah, yeah.
When we look at the Bhagavad Gita, it's spoken in a time where there is political instability. There are social problems going on. There are problems of leadership. Look at the world around us,
yeah.
You know, political instability, everything from Brexit to discontented people who have huge doubts in our leaders. Basically, what I want to say to you is that although on an external level, it may seem like a different culture, a different era, and a totally different time in the world, mm-hmm. The principles that were underpinning the need for spiritual wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, the same things are needed now because the same problems are going on in a context that is a bit more modern, but essentially is troubled by the same issues and riddled with the same, complexities. And so when we look a little bit deeper, then we'll actually see that every problem that Arjun encounters and every question that he asks are problems that we even encounter now and questions that we will ask and questions which will confront us at one point in our life.
Okay, so the Gita's teachings are somewhat timeless, that they're not just fixed to that particular moment in time, but we can see a correlation between Arjuna's situation and what we're experiencing today in one way or another.
Yeah.
Wow.
And even if you can think of life is like a battlefield in one sense, you know, sometimes there's so many influences which are conflicting with our path in life. And so just as Arjuna was on a battlefield, we're also on a battlefield. And in that way, the Gita has an extreme relevance to our life. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And that's one of the most amazing things about the Gita is this. It's like, imagine being on a battlefield with like, you know, all these hundreds of thousands of millions of soldiers there just about to start. Like, you know, this like a huge war is just about to start. Mm-hmm. And in the intensity of that situation, Arjun says, no, whoa, just one moment here.
Yeah.
I got to take time to step back and reflect. Now, someone faced with that level of intensity still felt the need to step back and deeply consider what's happening around him. Now, most of us, we think our lives are intense. We think we're busy. We think we're up to here with responsibilities. How do I even have the time or the mental space to even question any of these things? But Arjun's situation was far more acute, and he did it to show us that no matter how intense life is, everyone has to step back and reflect. Otherwise, we might be going nowhere fast.
Wow. Thank you. That's a good response for that. I really like that. I appreciate that. Now, let's look a little bit more in the knowledge or in the format of this Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken in Sanskrit. It's Sanskrit knowledge. I'm coming from Nairobi, Kenya, and other people are coming from different parts of the globe, where Sanskrit would be the last thing, or the only thing I'd be relating with Sanskrit would be a tattoo that I want to have just because it looks good. So for me, who doesn't have any or somewhat of a direct connection with Sanskrit, how do I really understand that this Sanskrit knowledge is relevant for me as a person who has no contact with it until, you know, I meet you and, you know, have this conversation?
Yeah, sure. First thing is that, don't worry, the Sanskrit is translated into English. So
good. Fair enough.
That's one thing. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to say is that I don't know if you're aware, but Sanskrit is considered the mother of all languages. So even if you look at a lot of Indo-European languages, they're derivations of Sanskrit. So for example, you'll find many, many similar words found, in different languages to the Sanskrit language. You know, like for example, in Sanskrit, we have a word stan, which means to stay. Yeah. Mm. Now just think of ST. Now think of, tell me some words which start from ST in English.
Stick.
Stick. Yeah. It has a connotation of staying, doesn't it?
Of staying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tell me another ST word.
Yeah. Stall. So like stall, you stall something. Staying. So yeah. Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Go on, tell me another one.
Stand.
Stand.
Yeah, so stand, yeah, exactly, yeah.
See, like, it's a beautiful language. Okay, so that's the thing. Now, another thing is that Sanskrit is a mode of communication, just like we have English. English is also a beautiful language. But what language does is language is a medium to convey something much deeper. Language is a vehicle to convey our emotions. Sanskrit is a very beautiful language because it's so complex and so refined that it's able to describe those emotions in the most amazing way possible, in the most precise way as possible. You know, like sometimes you want to tell someone something that's in your heart and you're just like, I can't explain it. You know, it's like, I can't explain it in words. Sometimes words can't, you know, express what we feel. But Sanskrit is probably the most advanced language in terms of expressing how we feel, our heart. And that's why Sanskrit is special. But the point I'm making here is that even if you don't know Sanskrit, the messages that it's conveying and the emotions that it's kind of delivering through its syllables are things which are known to each one of us. And so when we go beyond cultural difference, we'll realize the Bhagavad Gita is not just a sectarian culture, a certain sectarian cultural language, or a certain sectarian cultural set of beliefs. But what we'll realize is that all this culture is actually simply conveying something which is universal to each one of us. And therefore people across the world read Bhagavad Gita, everyone from Gandhi to Martin Luther King to Nelson Mandela and even KRS-One.
KRS-One?
That's before you. Oh my
God,
KRS-One. Okay, even wrap up. Check it out on YouTube.
That's something I'm gonna look at. Yeah, is that what you used to listen to?
Professionals as well. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Okay, cool. Thank you for that. So it's nice.
Will Smith. You know Will Smith, right?
Yeah, yeah. Will Smith. Yeah, yeah. No, Will Smith. Yeah, for sure.
How he's finding his inner Arjun now.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I heard about. Actually, even I know Tupac Shakur, who was a famous rapper as well. Who I also, you know, Tupac. He also actually did reference the Gita in some of his conversations. Well, fair enough. That kind of makes me feel a little bit more comfortable coming from Kenya. Like, okay, probably I can delve into this a little bit more. Now you spoke on, you know, the idea that the Bhagavad Gita is intersectarian kind of a thing. It's not being grouped in a particular kind of way that differs from the rest, but we see, obviously, you know, as in the format of how things are being presented, you know, there's different religious groups, you know, that have been coming after the Gita was spoken, you know, Islam, Christianity, and they all do speak on, you know, some relevant things that we can learn from and draw from on our time. So my question to you is, how does the Gita differ from these other philosophies? And is there something that the Gita is having that otherwise I wouldn't be able to get from these other philosophies?
Yeah, that's a good question. Wherever you find genuine spirituality in the world, we value that. Whatever religious denomination it may come from, whatever part of the world it may originate from, in whatever language it's spoken, spirituality transcends barriers. And therefore, the Gita's teachings help us to see unity and diversity, that every religion in its diverse presentation of the existential reality, they each have value and they're each beautiful in their own rights. However, if you want to understand what is the most advanced theology in the world, then you have to look at four things. One thing is eternality. That means, how relevant are the instructions and the wisdom that's given in this tradition over all times, places, and circumstances in history? If it's more advanced, it will be universally applicable over the eternal duration of the universe and how it runs. Mm-hmm. So eternality is one thing you have to look at. The second thing is comprehensiveness. How much does that theology comprehensively cover and explain the different complexities of life, the universe, and everything within it? The more comprehensive a theology is, the more advanced it is. Mm-hmm. The third thing is beauty. What is the beauty of the theology that's being expressed? What is its poetic? What is it that within it that touches the heart? What is it that, you know, makes the mind spin and really endears us towards approaching a divine reality out of love? Mm-hmm. Beauty is very, very important because we want to be attracted. Yeah. And the fourth thing is auspiciousness. That what is the effect of this theology on the world? How will it actually engender and make a better world? So if someone wants to make an objective analysis of what is the most advanced theology in the world, ask yourself, eternality, how relevant is it over all times, places, and circumstances? Mm-hmm. Two, comprehensiveness, how much does it actually explain the expanse of reality? Three, beauty, what is its beauty in its in how it touches our hearts and attracts our attention? And for auspiciousness, what auspiciousness does it create in the world around us? And when you look at the Bhagavad Gita on these factors, then you will see that it scores top points on everything. And therefore, to say that the Bhagavad Gita is the most advanced theology in the world is not just a sectarian claim, but it can be verified through objective analysis of the contents of its theology. And therefore, it remains, a perennial bestseller in the world and attracting the minds of philosophers, thinkers, and spiritualists alike, scientists. It's amazing. So, and it's so, so relevant, so incredibly relevant that you read it and you think, wow, it answers your questions even before you've asked them.
Well, you are kind of convincing me a little bit now, but I need to keep my cool a little. Wow, no, but that's a very, very good response. And that checklist of the four things, eternality, comprehensiveness, beauty, and auspiciousness, that's something to actually, that's something, you know, people actually should look for when trying to look at a philosophy or a theology that they want to embody in their lives. So that's a very, very good checklist. I appreciate that. Now, when I go online and I Google the Bhagavad Gita, you know, I see that there's so many different versions. So many different versions interpreted in different ways and, you know, highlighting different things. And I'll touch on to like some of the teachings that are in the Gita a little bit on a surface level, and I'll leave the rest to you. But we find that in the Gita, Krishna, who's, you know, the main speaker, who's giving up this knowledge, who's giving Arjuna this understanding, touches on very, very interesting things. In some places, he talks about devotional service. In some places, he talks about charity. In some places, he talks about, you know, performing one's duty. So he gives all these different claims. And when you look online at these different versions of the Gita that are existing, some of them are focusing on these different claims as its ultimate goal. So how can we sustain faith in this knowledge, understanding what the goal actually is, seeing that there are so many varied options that are somewhat being presented by Krishna in the Gita? What's your take on that?
Yeah. Nice question. You see, Krishna is giving something for everyone. Mm. Krishna is like, what do you want in life? Like, one thing you'll realize when you read the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna is a really nice guy. Like, he's really amazing. And Krishna's kind of looking at all of the different people who are going to read the Bhagavad Gita and is trying to see, like, what is everyone interested in? And what Krishna does in the Gita is he provides something for everyone so that they can elevate themselves in a way that's appropriate and inspiring for them at their point in their life at the moment. But what Krishna also does, so he gives many, many different things. Like, you can do this, you can do that, and better than that is this. And, you know, maybe you can also try this out. But then what Krishna does is he does make it very, very clear when he comes to the culmination of his teachings as to what the ultimate goal is and what the ultimate destination is and what the ultimate aspiration of the soul is and how to fulfill that deepest, innermost longing. And so if you read the Gita in its totality, you understand all of the different statements in context, then there's no contradiction. You think, like, this is just someone giving some many, many different tools and practices and tips and advice, and then finally saying, and the ultimate thing is just make sure you get to this point. And that's what Krishna does. So I find that that's amazing. I find that's really endearing. The amazing thing is, you know, like Krishna in the Gita, he's giving all this amazing knowledge. And you know what Krishna's saying in Sanskrit? He says, iti me mati. Iti me mati. This phrase comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. He says, this is something you could do. Iti me mati, but it's just my opinion. And then he says this another, like, far out amazing thing. And then Krishna says, iti me mati, it's just my opinion. Krishna is so humble. It's like, you know, like, if you were in Krishna's position, you're like, hey, like, you better listen to me, you know, like, I know what I'm talking about after all.
Yeah.
Krishna is like, these are all the things here. It's my opinion, you know, you could do this or you could do that. And my ultimate opinion is that you might want to think about doing this. And at the end of the Gita, he's just like, think about it and then do what you want to do. So let me tell you this. The Gita is an amazing book because it doesn't tell you what to think. it teaches you how to think.
Well,
Krishna doesn't want to just lay it down and say, do this, otherwise you're finished. Krishna's saying, like, here, I'm going to lay out a whole load of different things. I'm going to give you my coaching advice. And then you know what? I want you to use your own intelligence. And I want you to think about it. Because Krishna wants us to enter into something much more heartfelt. So he's never prescriptive, but he's simply inspirational.
Wow, wow, wow. You are convincing me a little bit deeper now. Like, that's very, very nice. So the Gita gives you a holistic understanding of everything based on where you're at, how you can be able to progress. Gives you the ultimate standard, but also gives you a sense of individuality to kind of make your own decisions and move on independently without feeling influenced.
There's a beautiful verse at the end of the Gita, and just because about Sanskrit, we'll just get a bit of Sanskrit in here as well. Uh-huh. Krishna says, Iti te jnanam akhyatam guyat guyataram maya vimrashe tadasheshena yatejasi tathaguru. He's just spent all this time explaining all this far out stuff to Arjun. And then at the end, he says, Vimrasheta dasheshena. Think about it, Arjun. Yate chasi tata guru. And then whatever you want to do, be free. Pursue that path. Pursue your calling. And Arjun, you know, he got the point. He said, no, Krishna, I'm on the page. I'm going down your line. And then Arjun achieves everything he wants to achieve in life. So, yeah, it's really the Gita wants you to become a thinker. Sometimes people think when you come to read a spiritual literature, you have to like leave your brain behind. The spiritual literature is meant to actually activate our brain, because most of the time we're not thinking, we're not questioning, we're not critically analyzing life, but rather we're just kind of going along. And the books come out and say, you know what? Think about it. Question. Wow. Einstein said, never stop asking questions. Curiosity has its own reason for existing.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. No, that's, thank you for that. Thank you for that. That's, wow. I'm getting a little bit more convinced now. I feel like actually I'm, but I still want to hold my ground and, you know, kind of keep my stand a little bit on this one. So, I open the Gita and the first verse that pops starts by saying Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya is saying, Dhritarashtra Uvacha, sorry, yeah, Dhritarashtra Uvacha. So Dhritarashtra is asking what's going on. And then Sanjaya, as it progresses, is explaining the account of what's going on between Krishna and Arjuna. So my question is, Sanjay could just be an ordinary person like me who's hearing things and trying to interpret them based on how he's understood and heard them. How do I know that the texts that we're reading in this book are actually Krishna speaking to Arjuna and not Sanjay's own concoction, interpretation, or, you know, kind of his own thing that he's trying to present to us here?
Yeah. Before I address that, just to let you know, like, yeah, Sanjaya was at the palace, like away, like hundreds of miles away from where the conversation was taking place. And it's like Dhritarashtra is asking him, like, how's he going to be able to say anything? They're in the palace hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, like in recent years, and, you know, anyone who's online, you can check this out. They've discovered something called remote viewing. And this is like where people can connect with someone on a psychological level and see what they're seeing, even though they're hundreds of miles away from that place.
Mm.
And they've done actually experiments on this. You can check it out on the internet. It's called remote viewing. Mm-hmm. So Sanjaya was accomplished in that art. He was a remote viewer. He could, by his vision, he was able to witness everything that was going on. Now, how do we know he didn't just make it up? Even if he could see it, he might have just been seeing one thing and telling Dhritarashtra his own story, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Thing up. You see, with questions like this, we could question everything. Why then just question the Bhagavad Gita? Why not question the newspaper that you read? Why not question the university textbook that you opened up? Why not question everything your mom and dad told you from day one. Mm-hmm. In learning anything, first we have to begin with some faith. Faith is not opposed to knowledge. Faith is the foundation of knowledge. Yeah, I want to make this point very clear. Yeah. Faith is not opposed to knowledge. Faith is the foundation of knowledge. When you begin with faith, rational faith, reasonable faith, and then you develop your understanding, then that faith evolves into something much deeper, which is an internal realization of the subject matter. Mm. So, just like when you went to university, and you had faith in the professors, you had faith in the textbooks, and you applied yourself to the process, and you came out a wiser person. And now you can look back and verify that many of the things that they taught you, you know what, they were true, because I've experienced those things now. And it's the same with the Gita. The ultimate proof of the Gita is that when you read it with faith, you apply it with determination, then you will experience it in an inspirational way in your life. And then that's the ultimate proof of it. So the basis of having faith in what Sanjaya narrates to Dhritarashtra, the basis of having faith in the translations that we read of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is that many, many people have read it. And many, many people's life have been transformed, and many, many people have had significant spiritual awakening because of their study of that literature. So it's reasonable to think like, okay, well, maybe there's something in it. Now, we're not asking you to just abandon all of your intelligence. We come with your intelligence, ask questions, and you'll find that the Gita has the perfect answers.
Wow, wow, no, for sure. No, I appreciate that. And also, I think to just add on that as well, now look at me, I'm on your side a little bit now, but also the fact that, you know, it's giving you something that's also practical and that you can experience. And what's also in Prabhupada's purports and in his explanations are things that as you keep on progressing in your spiritual life, you're having one-to-one interactions with, then that does solidify your faith as well. So it's giving you both a philosophical perspective and a practical one as well. And that secures that faith even more.
We tell this often to people that the Bhagavad Gita is not a book that's meant to help you to believe in God. Belief in God is like, that's just the beginning. That's like ABC stuff. The Bhagavad Gita will give you some belief in the divinity, in the deeper purpose of life. But the Bhagavad Gita is not just meant to make you believe in these things. It's meant to equip you with a spiritual process which will help you to perceive these things in reality in your life at every single moment. It's meant to actually give you a direct experience. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
That's it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Jai, no, thank you. That's very, very good response. I really love that. Now, I had one more question. And this is in regards to the position that Arjuna is playing in this book and in this interaction. So we hear that Arjuna represents us and is asking questions that to some degree we can be in that position. He puts himself in a position of our distress, of our anxieties, of how we cope into the world. But we can see as well that Arjuna had a specific relationship with Krishna, you know, from before. So he had that established relationship with Krishna. Then he gets this distressful situation and Krishna reveals this knowledge upon his inquiry. Now, for me, who is not having this one-to-one interaction with Krishna, like Arjuna, how would I have faith in his perspective and in his position that he's doing this for me when his position is one that I can't even relate to?
Sure. Let me ask you this. Have you learned things from people in this life who you've never met?
Well, true. Yeah. Yes, I have.
Yeah, or maybe some of your college lecturers, when you started learning from them, you had never met them before. Maybe there's people, famous people in the world that you've learned stuff from that you've never met before. Maybe there's, you know, and maybe there's people that you've known for ages, maybe even very nice people, but they may not have necessarily taught you many things. You may just know them as a good person and have a good relationship with them, but it doesn't mean they necessarily taught you. So relationship is not necessarily required for a transmission of knowledge in the first instance. One can get knowledge from anywhere. And as one begins to receive that knowledge, the relationship with the personality who's giving you that knowledge will then develop along. And factually, that's how it happens a lot of the time in our life. So that's one aspect to realize, that we shouldn't worry that, okay, I feel like Krishna is like, he's blue and he just plays a flute and, you know, like, I don't know, he's got like a peacock feather and it's like, I don't know, like I've never met him before, like, and now I'm going to like start hearing from him. But it shouldn't be a block, because with an open heart and open mind, and a sharp intelligence, approach it. Listen, question it, mull over it a bit, contemplate it. Maybe if you feel inspired, try and apply some of it. And as you do, you'll find that Krishna is not just giving you knowledge, but he's speaking to you. He's speaking to you. Krishna is alive. Krishna knows. He's in your heart. He knows what you're going through. And through the Bhagavad Gita, he begins speaking to you. So our relationship with Krishna begins when we begin hearing from him. That's when the real relationship begins. And then on a deeper ontological level, we're all actually connected with Krishna. We just don't know. We are suffering from spiritual amnesia, and therefore we know Krishna actually. You know, there are people in this world who have amnesia, and they just like overnight, just boom, they can't remember what their name was, who their family members were, where they lived. And you know how they, one of the ways in which they rejig their memory is by putting them in those situations. No, associate with these people. Go back to your old town. Start doing the things you used to do before. And then they begin to refamiliarize. Oh, yeah, this is who I am. This is who I was, you know. So as soon as you start reading the Gita, your spiritual amnesia starts to disappear. And you realize, you know what, Krishna? I've known this person since eternity. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and he knows me even better than I know myself.
Wow. Well,
it's life. It's real. It's real. The Gita doesn't just give you knowledge, it also awakens a relationship. And you know what? That is even in one sense more powerful than the knowledge you get, is the sense of relationship with the person who's giving you the knowledge. Because that's what ultimately will inspire your life.
That's it. That's it. Wow. No, thank you for that. That's a really nice way to put it there. You know, having that relationship and how it develops that even more. So even if I haven't seen Krishna, even if the whole concept or of a blue boy with a flute who, you know, is dancing around with his boyfriends and girlfriends is somewhat unrealistic to me, still by listening to the knowledge, I will develop that relationship and my spiritual amnesia will kind of be restored. It will be depleted. Wow. No, that's amazing. Wow. So those are these are the questions that I had packed up. Now, the reason I wanted us to have this discussion on the Gita is, I know you don't like a plugging and you don't like to, you know, to be marketed or, you know, put in this kind of situations, but you are going to be taking us through a discourse on the Gita, as I did mention earlier. I know we've just touched on things on the surface, but probably for people who would be here who probably want to connect with Gita, like I was seeing Mr. Mehra was here saying that, you know, some of the things about Krishna he hasn't really contemplated or thought about. He's just learned to love him from the get-go. So for people like this who would want to understand the Gita, want to connect further with it, what is it that we'll be doing in this course, that you'll be giving us in this course to kind of get us that level.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share something on this. Yeah, we're going to have like 10 weeks and we're going to go through this whole journey of the Gita. We're going to go through every single chapter. We're going to be drawing out life lessons. We're going to challenge it. We're going to see how it relates to life. We're going to look at ground zero, what's happening in the world around us. And we're going to kind of see like how the Gita is going to be able to help the situation. And most of all, remember, the Gita is not telling you what to think. This whole course is about coaching you on how to think, capacity of thinking. And I think this is the greatest gift that we have, the gift to look critically at life, to search within, to kind of curiously challenge and question the world around us. And the Gita is a book which just unlocks that potential. So so they say small minds discuss people. Average minds discuss events. Mm-hmm. But great minds discuss wisdom. Yeah. So like, we're just going to try and get into it. And like, you're very kind, but I'm not going to pretend like I'm the Sutapa, the scholar of the Bhagavad Gita. To be honest, when I come on these courses and try to share what I've learned, I learn so much myself from all the other students. So we're just going to get into it. We're going to have some amazing discussions. And yeah, if you're free and available, like, just jump on. I think it will be useful. Like, it will get you thinking. And, yeah, it will have great relevance to everything you're going in life.
Yeah, definitely. I believe I'm going to actually, like, you know, take it on board, because all my questions, all the doubts that I had about the Gita, you've kind of dispelled them a bit. And yes, I will be taking advantage and kind of finding out more about the Gita and, you know, seeing how that can also apply in my life and make me also a thoughtful thinker as well. So thank you so much for that. And I really like, yeah, what you just said, like small minds, you know, discuss people, average minds discuss events, but, you know, the top minds, they're the ones that discuss the wisdom. And I think that's a really powerful thing, that we focus so much on the events, what's going on in the now. Yes, it does have some, you know, relevance, but the wisdom behind it is the pinnacle. That's the main thing, what the lessons we can draw from that. And no, I'm really looking forward to that course. So guys, you guys have heard it from the facilitator of the course himself. A very, very humble individual. So make sure you come and join us. Find out more information. I can see one of our teammates over here is actually giving the information. You can go on schoolofbhakti.com, which is our main website. And the information on the course will be there. And if you have any information, you can email us at info@schoolofbhakti.com. Now, before we conclude, we had one nice question that was asked by Jagannath Kirtan Prabhu. He's quite familiar with us. And we can probably finish on this note. And he was saying, what is your most favorite verse of the Gita and why? And if you can, please do sing the Sanskrit as well.
Okay, I already quoted it actually in this this conversation, but I'll quote it again. Iti te gyanam akhyatam guyat guyataram maya vimrashe shena yatechasi tata guru. Krishna explains the whole Gita to Arjuna. Iti te gyanam, I have given you knowledge which is so profound, so confidential. Vimrashe tadashe shena. Now, Arjuna, I want you to think about it, contemplate it, mull it over in your mind, reflect upon what you've just heard. And then he says, yate chasi tata guru, and then do what you want to do. So Krishna, in the Gita, he gifts us with everything, and he gives it to us as a wonderful package. And then he says, take this, think about it, look at the world around you, look deep in your heart. What is it that you want? What is it that you're searching for? What is it that you most aspire for in life? Think about all of that, and then think about this knowledge I've given. And you'll see that it all actually connects, because this knowledge I'm giving you is going to help you fulfill every desire, every aspiration, every deep-seated hope that you have in your heart. And but he says, I'm not going to force you. It's your decision. And I feel that is the essence of spirituality, that let us do it from our heart. We may have grown up in a cultural tradition. We may have grown up in a religious tradition. We may have grown up with being an atheist. But now let us deeply think about life, and then let us do whatever we're going to do, but do it with our heart. And when we have knowledge, it helps to do it with greater feeling and spirit.
Wow. No, thank you so much for that. That was so wonderful. Like I'm even just smiling. I can't help it. You know, you dispel my doubts in most of these questions, and I feel like I also now, you know, want to do this. So thank you so much. I think we'll conclude there. If anyone has any other questions or thoughts, please do put them down. We are actually saving these questions as well to do more discussions and forums in the future. I know Suchapa Prabhu really enjoys, you know, kind of diving deep into these questions and dispelling the doubts and the thoughts that people might have based on the knowledge. So we'll be more excited for that. So thank you, Suchapa Prabhu, and thank you to everyone who's kind of joined us here today. Hare Krishna.